I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Kate Hibbard-Gaines, Principal Gifts Advisor for Three Square. Until the end of May, Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors. So for every dollar donated, Three Square can provide up to six wholesome, nutritious meals to children and families in need. Kate, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Heather. Thanks so much for having me on and for sharing your platform with us.
Yeah, so for those who don't know exactly what Three Square does, can you tell us a little more about it?
Absolutely. Three Square is Southern Nevada's only food bank and largest hunger relief organization with a mission to provide wholesome food to hungry people while passionately pursuing a hunger-free community. We support four counties in Southern Nevada, Lincoln, Nye, Clark, and Esmeralda, with most of our service happening in Clark just because it's most densely populated.
Okay, and when was it first started?
Yeah, Three Square opened its doors in December of 2007. So we are in our teenage years as an organization.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And how many meals does Three Square distribute on an average month or day?
A lot. You know, I've got that number on an annual basis. We've last year distributed just over about 43 million pounds of food. And this year we're on track to do somewhere close to that, if not more. As an organization, we got started, as I mentioned, in December of 2007. And to kind of put some perspective to this, the first year of operations, Three Square distributed about 10 million pounds of food. And then at the height of COVID, over 70 million pounds of food. And so we're settling in now to somewhere around 45 million pounds of food annually.
Yeah, that's a lot of food.
It is. It is. And it's a lot of food because, unfortunately, there's a lot of need in our community.
Yeah, so the people who are in need, how do they get access to that food?
Yeah, there's a variety of ways for folks that might be looking for food assistance in the community. One of the best things to do and one of the first steps I always suggest is to head to threesquare.org. You can click on Get Help, and there you'll find a number of different resources, including a list of local pantries in the community. Those are our food distribution partners who are providing food. We also have our call center listed on there where folks can call, speak to a representative who can walk you through sort of what resources might be available to you, to your family, maybe a neighbor, you know, depending on who's calling, and help you get connected with the resources that you need at that time.
Okay, awesome. So obviously people can make donations to Three Square all year round, but what exactly happens during the current Bag Childhood Hunger campaign?
Yeah, this is a great time to maximize any dollars donated to the food bank. The Bag Childhood Hunger campaign was set up. We try to raise about $2 million annually for our childhood nutrition programs. And these are programs that assist children with food in our community, as well as families, and give them the resources and nutrition that they need to thrive and grow and be active members of our community. And so you can head to threesquare.org and click on donate. And right now, through the end of May, each dollar can provide up to six meals, which is quite a bargain if you ask me, given the grocery costs these days.
Yeah. So how do you make that food so affordable?
So Three Square is part of a Feeding America network. It's a network of nearly 200 food banks across the country. Feeding America is the largest domestic hunger relief organization that supports all of these food banks in various ways. One being that it helps us source and receive food in at either no or to little cost. And so we're able to purchase truckloads of product at a time at a very low or sometimes even at an in-kind rate. And that allows us to really stretch the dollar a lot farther than perhaps you or I could if we were going out grocery shopping. So food banks historically have been a very efficient and effective model for procuring food and then distributing it out into the community. And we work really hard to make sure we maintain those efficiencies throughout our entire operation.
Okay. Now, just to clarify, you buy the food at currently up to six meals for a dollar because of the match campaign, normally up to three meals for a dollar, but it doesn't cost the clients anything to get that food, right?
That's right. You know, folks receive food through our agency partner model or what we call food distribution partners. These are other nonprofits in the community that are out on the front lines engaging with those individuals who may need a meal. And that's organizations that you may know of that are large in scale, like Catholic Charities or the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. But also many of those agencies are also small pantries that are run out of maybe a church or some sort of other building. Often it's volunteer run, and maybe they're only open a few days a week as opposed to on a day-to-day basis. But there's a number of partners throughout the Valley that are receiving food from Three Square and then distributing that back out into the community, into the hands of those who need it.
Nice. Okay. And who are the sponsors who are making the donation matches during the Bag Childhood Hunger campaign?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I love to give a shout out to our partners because without them, this campaign is really not the success that it is. And so just a big thank you goes out to Nevada Gold Mines, operated by Barrick, the NV Energy Foundation, and Tobin Motor Cars. They consistently come to the table every year and say, there's too much hunger in this community. There's certainly too many children going hungry in this community, and we want to do something about it. And so we greatly appreciate their support.
Okay, awesome. Now, obviously, as we mentioned, people can make monetary donations to Three Square. What other opportunities are there for Las Vegas residents to help out or support the organization?
There's a lot of different ways to get involved. And one, you could just head to threesquare.org and just learn a little bit about food insecurity. So many people don't realize, and myself included, when I started doing this work over 10 and a half years ago, you know, the face of hunger is just not what you expect it to be. It's more often than not working parents or working individuals who for some reason have stumbled across some difficult times and are struggling to make ends meet. And that's why we're there. And that's why our partners are there to support these individuals and families during a tough time. Another really great way to give back is to volunteer. We offer a variety of volunteer activities Monday through Friday, from packing product and sorting product at our warehouse, at our facility, to even joining us out in the community at some distributions that might be happening. And so I have volunteered with almost all of our programs, I want to say, and all of them are just truly rewarding because everything you touch in the hour or 2 hours you spend volunteering ends up in the hands of someone who needs that food either that day or the next day.
Okay. And just to be clear, so people could donate food to the food bank, but right now the monetary donation really makes the most difference due to that six meals for a dollar.
Yeah, we certainly, of course, always welcome food donations and food drives, but the food bank has the ability to really stretch the dollar very far and, you know, turn your $10 into quite a lot of food, as opposed to, again, if, you know, we went to the grocery store, $10 just doesn't go as far these days.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't buy 60 meals at the grocery store.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's give them the website again where people can go for more information about Three Square and also make a donation to the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign.
Yeah, please visit threesquare.org, and that's where you can learn more, donate, or sign up to volunteer.
Okay, awesome. So threesquare.org is the website to go to. threesquare.org. Now you can find out more information about what Three Square does. You can sign up to volunteer, make a donation, especially now for the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign, which is running through May 31st. Your donation will be doubled thanks to the matching sponsors. And also if you're in need of services, if you're in need of food and want to find a pantry close to you, you can go to threesquare.org as well and click on Get Help and look at the list of local pantries, or call the hotline if you would rather ask over the phone. Both options are available. All of that at threesquare.org. And we've been speaking with Kate Hibbard-Gaines. She's the Principal Gifts Advisor for Three Square. And Kate, it's great to hear what you're doing in the community, the difference you're making for so many food insecure residents. And the Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is absolutely amazing. So thank you for being here, letting us know more about it, and letting us know how the community can help out.
Well, thank you, Heather. We truly appreciate the opportunity to get the word out and appreciate all that you do. Thank you.
We need each other because every someone needs someone else.
We need each other because when we work together, we can do so much more.
We connect more children with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. And that's what Child Fund is all about.
Because when you make someone's world better, you make everyone's world better.
Child Fund. Because we need each other.
Learn more at childfund.org. That's childfund.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm speaking with Shanna Harrington, Youth Services Manager for the Las Vegas Clark County Library District. Right now, the district's holding its free summer challenge program with lots of prizes for kids and adults. Shanna, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what exactly is the Las Vegas Clark County Library District?
So it's a great resource for our community. We have 25 branches all over Southern Nevada. So we have places all the way from Laughlin to Searchlight to Middle of Town, Meadows, Sunrise, East Vegas, West Vegas, Windmill, all over the place. So we are very much in every part of our community down here.
Are there any parts of the valley that it doesn't cover?
Right now, it would be Henderson, North Las Vegas, and Boulder City. But we have agreements with all of those libraries. So honestly, you could go and check out a book from there or video, whatever, and bring it back here and vice versa.
Nice. Okay. And how long has the district been around?
Oh, many, 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 many years. I've been with the district for 22 years. And honestly, we've been, 50 years with the district here in the Valley. So we've been storefronts and we've moved into permanent buildings all over.
Okay, awesome. So besides the ability to check out books, what does the library offer to residents?
Oh, so much more than books now. A lot of people still think that libraries are warehouses for books, but we have 3D printing, we have robotics, we have STEAM programs, we have family programs. We have actually 5 different really giant theaters in our libraries. So we have arts programming, we have adult book clubs, we have just so much that we offer for kids and adults together. And it's just amazing community really building. You know, we are that third place that you can go, even, you know, better than a Starbucks, where you don't have to pay for anything. You can come and hang out with your friends and start up a business, all kinds of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So speaking of things that people might not know about, what is the Summer Challenge program?
Summer Challenge is awesome. So we started out with it being the summer reading program, and Summer Challenge really evolved from that because we understand that kids do unfortunately slide back in the summer. They lose some reading skills, but they also lose math skills and science skills and history skills. So we rebranded it to be just the Summer Challenge. And, you know, unfortunately, teachers spend about 2 months reteaching these skills in the beginning of the school year. And so we wanted to do those wraparound services and also make it fun. You know what I mean? Instead of just like, oh, you must read 30 minutes every day. It's more like, hey, come to a program, come to a story time, come, you know, build a robot, come do 3D printing. We just make it fun for the kids and their parents to be part of this challenge.
And what's the theme this year?
The theme is awesome. It's the ocean. And so, you know, we can just dive into the ocean. We really wanted to focus on that. So it's like a little bit of learning as well as just being fun. So we've got the twilight zone, the sunlight zone, the midnight zone. And it's just a really good way to really get kids interested in different things that, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, Las Vegas was covered underneath the lake, you know, millions of years ago. So, you know, just it broadened their minds.
Nice. Okay. So what are some of the components of the challenge and the prizes that people can win?
Oh, we are so excited this year. So the components of the challenge is really, we let them kind of build it themselves. They can do 30 minutes of reading and 5 activities. Those activities, if they want, can just be reading if they'd still like to do that. But there's 3 zones. And so once they do the third zone, it opens up May, June, and July. And so once they hit that third zone, then they've completed the challenge. But we also have a super reader challenge, which is for those kids kind of like myself who are really into reading and they just want to keep going, right? So they get a book or they get, you know, different swag when they come into the branches. But we have some great prizes this year. We partnered with the Illuminarium and Meow Wolf. So there's actually an adult portion of the program because, you know, quite honestly, I'm a reader because my parents are readers. And so we've got Illuminarium, we've got swag bags full of, you know, water bottles and different library things like VGK shirts. And we've got different branch prizes, which are some STEAM prizes that are appropriate for different levels for the kids. You know, teens can get cool cameras and things like that. So really, it's you know, a chance to win all of those things once you complete each level. And so each level has prizes. So, and the Super Reader Challenge, if you complete that, you're entered in to win an iPad at each of our 25 branches.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's some special events at various branches. What are some of those?
We have such cool guests this year. We have stunt masters, BMX. So they bring out a ramp and they do tricks and they go flipping up in the air and all that good stuff. And then they also teach bike safety, which is so important. So it's a little bit of both of that. We have prismatic magic laser light shows. We have a circus of bubbles, which is a magic show with bubbles. And then we have Steve Trash, who does like magic and science and eco science and things like that. We also have Cuckoo is coming back. They are an amazing kids band. They have like millions of followers on YouTube. And so we have Carlos Nieto for the teens. He does drawing workshops because manga and anime is so popular this year. Just it's been popular for the last few years. And then we have zine workshops and we have ballet folklorico and mariachi. So we're doing definitely bringing in a culture of the community here. So just amazing stuff happening all summer long.
Yeah, that sounds so much fun. So you said all summer. When does it all end?
So it ends July 31st. We've got plenty of things to do for everybody all summer long. And as I like to say, you know, I mean, in general, it's just a nice place to come during the summer because we have free air conditioning. And so it's just, you know, come in, do a program, hang out, read a book, you know, chill with your friends, chill with your family, and come check out one of our great programs up until July 31st and, you know, get ready for school.
Okay. So how can people take part and find out more information about the various challenges and the various levels that they can go through to win some of those prizes?
There's two really best ways to do this. You can come into any one of your branches, whatever's closest to you, and you can pick up a summer challenge log. And that'll tell you how to do everything. And you can track your reading and activities there. Or you can go to librarydistrict.org/summer challenge and you can sign up online.
Awesome. Okay. And if someone wants to take part, but they don't yet have a library card, what should they do?
That's not a problem. We put up no barriers to joining this program. Of course, we encourage them to get a library card because we encourage anybody to get a library card. But, you know, they can definitely participate without having one from home. But we always want to encourage everybody to get a library card because we've got some really cool Vegas Golden Knights library cards that are shiny and sparkly. And we've got a bunch of different designs. So we do encourage everybody to get a library card, but it's not a barrier to participating in the program.
And of course, if they do want to get a library card, that's free.
That is correct. It is $0. It's one of the questions I always ask when I go out to schools. I ask, how much is a library card? And the kids will guess $20, $50. And I always say less than that. And somebody out there, some smart kiddo is always like, it's free. And so it's a lot of fun to definitely hear that. And so it's pretty cool.
Okay. You did give the website, so let's give it one more time where listeners can go to learn more or take part in the summer challenge.
Absolutely. So go to thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge.
All right. Awesome. So once again, thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge is the website to go to, thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge. And the summer challenge program is running all the way through to July 31st with plenty of activities, various challenges, live events at the various branches around town. So once again, thelibrarydistrict.org/summer challenge is where it all happens, and it's all free. And we've been speaking today with Shanna Harrington. She's the Youth Services Manager for the Las Vegas Clark County Library District. And Shanna, it's been great hearing so much about this amazing program. It sounds like so much fun and such a great opportunity for the kids who are home for the summer with nothing better to do. And also the adults can get involved too. So fun for the whole family, and not just fun, but actually worthwhile, informative, educational fun. So I love it. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much again for having us. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Today, young adults face big questions about their future. How will you make your mark? Do you want to be part of something bigger than yourself? Are you ready to learn new skills and make new friendships? Perhaps you have a dream that you're ready to make real. So, how will you make a mark with your future? As you embark on a journey toward finding these answers, the military can serve as a resource for providing help, information, and opportunities. A public service message from the Department of Defense. To learn more, visit todaysmilitary.com.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Malcolm Mitchell, digital equity advocate and founder of the Share the Magic Foundation. The government's affordable connectivity program has ended, and that's affecting households across the country. Malcolm, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
So first of all, what's the Share the Magic Foundation?
Share the Magic Foundation is my foundation that I created in 2016. I grew up a struggling reader, and I wanted to create an organization that inspired and encouraged kids to read because I thought that exposure was so important to long-term success.
Awesome. Okay. So what's the Affordable Connectivity Program and what led to its termination?
So that's a good question. The Affordable Connectivity Program is a government program that made it easier for 23 million American households to pay for internet. This was crucial during the pandemic when people were forced into a virtual learning environment. This program is no longer being funded. So now I'm on here today to talk about some of the other options that COPS is providing to ensure that families, individuals, and communities still have the opportunity to be connected.
Okay, so what are some of the other affordable options that consumers have when it comes to being able to get connection, meaning internet access?
So some of the other low-cost options that COPS is providing is Connect to Compete. It's for families with kids in grades K through 12. It's a $9.95 a month internet plan. There's also Connect Assist, and that's for families who don't have those kids in grades K through 12, and that's a $30 a month plan. But the truth is, COPS has many options. And this, I get it. This could be stressful. I remember watching my mom become stressed over bills when I was a child growing up. I remember those difficult transitions. I remember how sometimes she would be so bothered by the changes. And I'm telling you, call or even go to COPS.com/ACP. They will work with you. They will present all the options that exist to ensure that you stay connected.
Okay. Now, some people would say, well, internet connection, that's not a necessity. That's a nice to have. It's a want, not a need. So why is it so important to offer people affordable connectivity?
How about I point out a couple statistics? This is research done by Cox Communications.
Okay.
70% of the people who are connected to ACP reported finding better jobs. One out of three people say they are first-generation college graduates due to home internet. And just to complete it with three, 49% of people say they've gotten promotions or pay increases because of the internet access. It matters. And COPS is trying to ensure that communities and individuals know that just because ACP is no longer being funded, that does not mean they have to not be connected because they have options. Those statistics and our research proves that being connected does make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what are some of the success stories you've heard? You gave some kind of high-level examples of what people can do when they have connection, but do you have any personal success stories of someone that you've met where just having that connectivity really made a difference for them?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll tell a personal story.
Yeah.
Growing up, I grew up in a low-income environment, and we were not connected to the internet, and nor did we have access to age-appropriate books. Share the Magic Foundation, the foundation you asked me about earlier, was created off of that exposure. Just understanding that the world was within reach, that there was more that the world had to offer outside of the things that I was confined to in my community. I learned through my personal experience of going to college and graduating and having my time in the NFL is that exposure is extremely important. And I learned that books weren't the only way to get that exposure, that the internet provided that as well. It did it for me. Did it for my family. My mom's in college right now, and she uses the internet every day. She's going to get her master's degree in social work. I've also been out in some of the markets with COPS as a digital equity ambassador. I've witnessed students in the Boys and Girls Innovation Labs expose me to new technology that inspires me. So it truly makes a difference. Students are understanding that there's a world out there that they have the ability to conquer, that the world is within reach. And they can really accomplish anything they put their mind to. Now, understanding how to use the internet in a safe way is important, but allowing it to empower your future is something that I've witnessed on numerous occasions.
Yeah, I think the key phrase that you brought up there is digital equity. So making it affordable for everyone, not leaving some people out of having those tools and those resources and those options just because they can't afford it.
Exactly. I mean, Cox has been championing digital equity for more than 10 years. I think Connection is at the heart of what they do. And to be honest, I signed on for that reason. To talk to communities, have opportunities to speak with people like you, to expose individuals to these resources. It became very important to me because I know that my family would have benefited from this information, from this resources when I was a child growing up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's give once again the website where people can go to explore alternative low-cost internet solutions now that the Affordable Connectivity Program has ended.
You can go to cox.com/ACP or call. Please reach out. Again, Cox has options. They understand that this can be a stressful process, but they are here to help.
Okay. And what if people want to find out more about what you're doing with the Share the Magic Foundation?
That's a great question. You can go to readwithmalcolm.com. In fact, I have virtual internet challenges that are free for communities. Also, try to do my best to ensure that children who may not be able to afford books have opportunities and exposure to programs that would make a difference. So again, that's readwithmalcolm.com. You can learn more about what I'm doing in the sphere of literacy.
Fantastic. Okay, so once again, the website to look at affordable internet options now that the Affordable Connectivity Program has ended, cox.com/ACP. ACP stands for Affordable Connectivity Program, cox.com/ACP. You can see more of their low-cost internet options. And if you want to find out more about what Malcolm is doing with the Share the Magic Foundation and helping kids read, that website, readwithmalcolm.com, readwithmalcolm.com. And we've been speaking with Malcolm Mitchell. He's a digital equity advocate and the founder of the Share the Magic Foundation. And Malcolm, it's been great talking to you and finding out more about this situation, why it's important, and what some of the alternatives are. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Do you know a veteran in need? Nation's Finest, through the VA's Supportive Services for Veteran Families program, helps veterans and their families struggling with rent, employment, and other housing-related costs. Today, Nation's Finest operates more than 30 locations in California, Arizona, and Nevada, helping thousands of veterans every year. Visit nationsfinest.org or call 1-833-468-9676. That's 1-833-468-9676.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Jenny Albertini, public health expert and author of the new book, Decluttered, Mindful Organizing for Health, Home, and Beyond. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and having a cluttered environment can definitely affect our mental and emotional health, and vice versa. Jenny, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So what prompted you to write this book, Decluttered?
Well, I've been working as a professional organizer for the last 8 years, ever since I transitioned away from working in public health for almost 2 decades with the U.S. government. And over the last few years, I've been finding more and more health-related issues and relationship challenges that my organizing clients have been facing around their clutter. And once we started digging into why clutter was piling up and what was going on in their households that was affecting their health issues, I realized that there was so much overlap that I wanted to talk about it more. And the book presented an opportunity to bring a lot of these things to life to a wider audience than just the clients I see in my own practice.
Yeah, it sounds like you're the perfect person to write this book.
I think so.
All right. So how does clutter affect our health? And in turn, how does our health influence the amount of clutter that we have?
So it comes up in so many different ways, Heather. One of the reasons is that research has shown that when MRIs are done on our brains actually prefer places of order. When we're constantly stimulated by reminders of disorganization, our brains are firing off all sorts of stress signals. What in turn that does is it creates cortisol to elevate in our bodies. So everyone knows cortisol as the stress hormone. And people who are in messy spaces more often have been found to show elevated levels of this. This can cause us to feel overwhelmed, feel exacerbated with what's going on in our households, and feel really unable to address those issues. So then we find out that the reverse is happening too, or a different directional effect of clutter. And that clutter is causing people to be stressed. It's causing them to be less likely to start or complete tasks, which is a problem that we see come up with executive functioning, which is basically cognitive processes that allow us to do what we want to do throughout the day. So over time, this creates a real back and forth issue for people who are overwhelmed by clutter in their life that leads them to feel less healthy overall.
Okay, so then what's the solution to stopping this vicious cycle and getting off the hamster wheel?
Yeah, I think the first step, Heather, is really becoming aware of what's going on in your environment. And so taking some time, I always recommend people, we start with some deep breaths just to try and regulate our nervous system and then try to view our environments objectively, just like you were a stranger walking in, and try to pinpoint, which areas of clutter are most bothersome to me? Can I figure out where that's coming from? How those piles or situations are adding up? And then we try and work backwards and see, are there any underlying reasons why this is happening or why I'm so triggered by that sort of situation? That allows us to figure out what we can do to change the environment and change how we feel related to the clutter around us.
Okay, so why is it important to approach this process mindfully?
Well, I think that when we're more mindful in our daily habits and daily routines, we're able to be more compassionate with ourselves and with others. So oftentimes people will see something that stresses them out in their home and they might have a really strong reactive response. It might be to yell, it might be to be upset. But unfortunately, all that does for our nervous system is to cause us to go more into dysregulation. When we approach things more mindfully, really trying to say, you know what, this is the situation. I'm not going to blame. I'm not going to add shame to the situation. I just really want to be curious about what that is. It gives us more expansiveness so that we can deal with things on a calmer level and then we feel better and the people around us feel better. That actually lets us be more likely to start and finish tasks related to decluttering and whatever else we want to do in our lives.
Okay, so do we need to start by tackling the physical clutter, or can we control our stress and regulate our emotions in other ways that will therefore allow us to manage the clutter better?
That's such a good question. And I think that you can pick whichever feels most comfortable for you. I do love when people have mindful practices or are open to them, whether that's just taking walks outside in the sunshine and fresh air, practicing meditation, or anything else that's a calming, regular habit, that will get you in your body in a better state to approach clutter. But sometimes people, that's not accessible to them right away. And so that's why we start decluttering with things. And as we're doing that, we just want to go slowly through it. We want to ask questions about what's going on. And that can also help people get into a calmer state over time.
Okay. Now, stress and anxiety from clutter, that's understandable. But sometimes there's this stigma or this shame around having clutter. You know, people start calling it a hoarder. And it becomes more than just, I've got a mess here that's affecting me emotionally, and more into, oh, I can't let anyone find out about this. And it can even lead to anger, social isolation. So how do we deal with that and downsize the issue before it gets out of hand?
Mm-hmm. I think we should be really mindful about how we're speaking about others' attachment to things, the buildup of items in a home, why people are certain things, because we really don't want to try and put shame on anyone for how they're living, of course. That said, if someone is dealing with hoarding behavior or hoarding disorder, which is a diagnosable mental health challenge, you do want to try and suggest, if that's someone in your life, that they seek help. There are different state-run services that allow support for people who are dealing with hoarding to address those things with therapists, also with trained professional organizers, because we do want to make sure that in any environment, people aren't being consumed by their things, of course, right? We don't want it to prevent basic hygiene from existing in a home or just being able to physically move throughout a space. So we can tackle these things, both sort of helping people get the help they need, working through the problem and downsizing items. And then also we want to do some introspection about where the shame is coming from. Is it because we're all trying to live up to certain ideals of what homes should look like or designs we see online? There are a lot of variations of what an organized space can look like and feel like across the U.S. What's most important is that people figure out what's right for them and their lifestyle, both aesthetically and functionally.
Okay. Now, we've been talking mostly about how clutter affects ourselves, but you mentioned it also affecting relationships. So how can clutter cause stress in relationships?
Oftentimes, I see clutter cause stress in relationships when people come together and they have different expectations around how long items should be kept, what the practice is for putting away things, and what financial plans they have for buying volumes of things. This often comes from how we've been brought up by our parents. So let's say there's a couple and one person comes from a household where they learned you keep things forever, you never throw things away. Well, if they bring that into a new relationship with someone who was taught to live more minimally or let go of things when you're done with them, there's going to cause some tension unless people have discussions about, for our home together as, you know, two people who have left our families of origin, what do we think is right for how we want to live our life? So in my book, I have a few examples and scripts that people can use to talk through with new partners, or if you want to sort of reframe your relationship around clutter with someone in your life, that can help lead to healthier discussions about decluttering and organizing in your home.
Nice. Okay. And then beyond our personal lives, how does the effect of clutter extend into our professional lives?
So very often, clutter is showing up in work situations in a variety of different ways. For people who are based in offices, there's often office clutter, of course, that's taking over cubicles or office spaces. But even more so, we're seeing challenges with digital clutter. We are all on our computers and our Zoom screens all the time, and files and screenshots are piling up all around us. And not to mention, of course, people often feel overwhelmed with work and with priorities that just keep getting piled on top of them. So when I work with companies or workplaces to discuss decluttering, we look first at who is being allowed to have time to just declutter regular inboxes and files online and personal spaces so that people feel more in control of what they're working with and then more successful at planning and carrying out their tasks. Because too many files and too much digital clutter can affect us even more so sometimes than the physical clutter around us. So I really can see this as a leadership opportunity for workplaces to make sure their employees are feeling supported to deal with clutter in their work lives efficiently and effectively over time.
Okay. So it's a beautiful book, by the way, gorgeous photography. It's inspiring to work with it and start reducing clutter. So where can listeners go if they want to learn more or get the book, Decluttered: Mindful Organizing for Health, Home, and Beyond?
Oh, thank you so much, Heather. I'm so glad you're enjoying going through it. You can find Decluttered Mindful Organizing for Health, Home, and Beyond anywhere online that books are sold. You also can go to my website, which is jennyalbertini.com, to read more blogs and articles and ideas that I share there around decluttering for all areas of our lives.
Perfect. Okay. So jennyalbertini.com is the website to go to for more information. Jenny with a Y, Albertini, A-L-B-E-R-T-I-N-I, jennyalbertini.com. You can order the book, find out more about the book, read her various articles, and you can also find the book, of course, online, Amazon, or wherever you like to shop. And the book is called Decluttered, Mindful Organizing for Health, Home, and Beyond. And we've been speaking today with Jenny Albertini, of course. She's the author of the new book. And Jenny, it's been very inspiring talking to you, very revealing as well. I think a lot of people maybe don't make that connection between our physical environment and our internal emotional environment. And you've done a great way of showing how it's a vicious cycle that affects each other both ways. So I really appreciate you sharing with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
Did you know that those with mental health challenges can be right in front of our eyes, but still go unseen? Behind some smiles, there's hidden pain because our struggles aren't always on the surface. And they can affect anyone, anywhere, at any time. It's okay not to feel okay. There's strength in connecting and seeking help. Share, connect, get informed. Your mental health is in your hands. Visit melaninthriving.com/mental health in your hands.
This message brought to you by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Raj Chovatiya, founder and director of the Center for Medical Dermatology and Immunology Research. Living with a chronic skin condition like various forms of dermatitis is more than just a physical problem. It can also make people feel self-conscious or embarrassed. Dr. Chovatiya, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what types of dermatitis and other chronic skin conditions do you deal with most often?
There's a variety of different forms of dermatitis. And the one that sort of we're chatting about here today is seborrheic dermatitis, one that is a chronic inflammatory skin disease. And by inflammation, we mean that it's characterized by certain cutaneous signs and symptoms. So large, greasy, flaking yellow scales, persistent itch, red patches, oftentimes appearing on characteristic and visible areas of the body, like the scalp and the face, which includes the cheeks, eyebrows, and beard, as well as the back and chest. And you highlighted a really important point. Because these symptoms are so visible, there's a lot of social stigma, negative self-image, and low self-esteem that can be attached to this condition.
Yeah, okay. What causes seborrheic dermatitis?
Another good question, and one that, you know, in the limits of our time today, I'll sort of keep it brief, but inflammation really at the surface of the skin and below is what's driving a lot of the signs and symptoms that we think about. And, you know, with the condition, a lot of folks don't realize it's actually quite common. It affects as many as about 10 million people in the US. And one of the challenges is that this inflammation that underlies the disease has these signs that I mentioned that oftentimes are not recognized by patients, and therefore it can actually take folks years to seek out a healthcare provider to actually receive a diagnosis. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to be talking to you today and partnering with Arcutis to raise awareness about seborrheic dermatitis and a new treatment option in ZORYVE foam.
Okay, so what are some of the treatment options for seborrheic dermatitis?
Yeah, so individuals have had a lot of challenges historically when it comes to thinking about treatment. So oftentimes folks have to use multiple different kinds of topical products for different parts of their body for different lengths of time, which can really make care quite complicated. So given the fact that sebderm is involving a lot of hair-bearing areas, many topicals like creams, gels, and ointments can be quite difficult. And thus, a lot of patients just haven't been historically satisfied with the treatment options available to them.
Okay, so topical products may or may not work. Are there any other alternatives to the topical products?
Yeah, so, you know, for the first time in 20 years, we actually have a first-in-class prescription topical foam. So I think that it's important to note that with ZORYVE foam, we have an FDA-approved treatment specifically for seborrheic dermatitis. And so kind of the high points that are really important to know is that ZORYVE or roflumilast topical foam 0.3%, it's approved for adults and children 9 years of age and older. It's a once daily steroid-free foam that actually targets an important source of inflammation that we think about as underlying seborrheic dermatitis. And the convenient part is that it can be used anywhere on the body, all skin and hair types. It's water-based, fragrance-free, and no common irritants.
Okay, what are the benefits of it being steroid-free as opposed to other topical treatments like cortisone that do have steroids?
Yeah, so one important part of the story with Zoryve is that it targets a specific enzyme we call phosphodiesterase 4 or PDE4, and that's one important part of the inflammation that underlies this disease. And given this sort of very specific targeting, there was clinical studies that were undertaken to take a look exactly how well Zoryve would perform as a singular therapy for individuals with the signs and symptoms associated with seborrheic dermatitis. So it was studied in almost 700 individuals, about 450 or so who used the Zoryve foam and another 200 or so that used a vehicle, which is the foam without an active drug. And the bottom line, about 77% of patients that were treated with Zoryve had clear or almost clear skin at 8 weeks, compared to only about 50% who use vehicle. And I do want to mention that the most common side effects that were seen with Zoryve included common cold, nausea, and headache.
Okay. And you mentioned that we're talking specifically about seborrheic dermatitis. In the future, are you expecting this type of treatment to be able to treat other forms of dermatitis as well?
Yeah, so dermatology is always exciting because of the innovation that we have in the field. And just, you know, given our focus here on seborrheic dermatitis today, I really want to sort of pause and just say it's an exciting moment for us to really think about an approved treatment option for this condition that affects so many millions of individuals. And I'm personally really excited to see how many patients are going to be able to have that conversation with their healthcare provider to figure out if this is going to be the right option for them. And there's a lot of great information available out there. I'll highlight Zoryve.com, Zoryve.com, that has information related to prescribing information, important safety information, and even about seborrheic dermatitis itself.
Okay. And of course, as you mentioned, always speak to your primary care physician as well to find out if this is the type of treatment that is going to work for you.
Absolutely. I couldn't have put it better myself.
Okay. Awesome. So once again, that website is Zoryve.com, is spelled Zoryve.com, Zoryve.com. It's a new prescription topical foam treatment for seborrheic dermatitis specifically. So if you have seborrheic dermatitis or you want to find out more about it, you want to find out more about this treatment before talking with your primary care physician, this is a great place to get more information. Zoryve.com, Zoryve.com. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Raj Chovatiya. He's the founder and director of the Center for Medical Dermatology and Immunology Research. And Dr. Chovatiya, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know about this new treatment and how it can make a difference for people, both physically and, as we talked about, emotionally, mentally as well. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Everyone has a community. A neighborhood, school, place of worship, or other chosen groups. Communities can provide support when you need it, including helping your kids avoid underage drinking and other substance use. Learn more at talktheyhearyou.samhsa.gov.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Aditya Bardia, Director of the Breast Oncology Program at the UCLA Health Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. May is Women's Health Month, and it's important to be aware of the latest in breast cancer detection, testing, and treatment. Dr. Bardia, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So, how common is breast cancer in the U.S.?
Breast cancer is the most common malignancy in the U.S., and that's why there's so much attention and focus on breast cancer, U.S. and worldwide.
Okay, and what is metastatic breast cancer?
Metastatic breast cancer, also called as stage 4 breast cancer, is an advanced form of breast cancer when there are cancer cells outside of the breast. So it could be something in the bones or the liver. When the tumor has spread outside of the breast, it's called metastatic breast cancer.
Okay, now how does breast cancer become treatment resistant?
When a patient with, say, hormone receptor positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer is on hormonal treatment or endocrine-based treatment, the tumors can develop mutations which can make it resistant to the hormonal treatment. The most common form of mutation are the ESR1 mutations. These are mutations in the estrogen receptor that can make the tumor resistant to hormonal-based treatment and thus can cause the tumor to grow. The reason this is important is because they are common. Nearly one in two women with hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer will have detectable ESR1 mutations.
Wow, okay. And how exactly are they detected?
Usually, ESR1 mutations are detected by a blood test. So that's why it's important to discuss with your treating provider in terms of when to test for ESR1 mutations and if they are detected, what it means in terms of your treatment plan. But given that they are common, nearly one in two women could have detectable ESR1 mutations, it's important to discuss and have the blood test so that if these mutations are present, you can have the appropriate treatment plan.
Okay. And once a mutation is found, such as an ESR1 mutation, what are the treatment options?
So I'm here with Menarini Stemline to raise awareness about ESR1 mutations. The reason ESR1 mutations are important is because they're actionable. So if they are found, it's important to discuss with your treating provider what it means in terms of your management plan as well, because there are certain specific treatments directed towards ESR1 mutations. So it could have an impact on the management plan.
Okay. So what are some of the questions that a woman should be asking their healthcare provider about the ESR1 mutation?
So two questions. The first is when to detect ESR1 mutations. It's something that should be considered when a person is on hormonal-based treatment for ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer. And the second is to discuss the management plan. So if ESR1 mutations are detected, what it means in terms of the treatment plan and potential change in treatment.
Okay. What is the key takeaway that you'd like the audience to remember about this issue of metastatic breast cancer and ESR1 mutation?
Just two points. The first is detect and discuss. So detect ESR1 mutations and discuss if these mutations are discovered with your treating provider in terms of what it means for your management plan. And the second is, if you want more information related to ESR1 mutations, there's a central website you could go to. It's knowesr1.com. So that is knowesr1.com.
Perfect. Okay. So knowesr1.com is the website to go to, knowesr1.com. ESR1 mutation is the mutation we've been talking about today, very common mutation in patients who have metastatic breast cancer. So knowesr1.com. And of course, have that discussion with your healthcare provider. But it's always great to have some background information and some more questions that you can ask for your treatment options. So knowesr1.com. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Aditya Bardia. He's the director of the Breast Oncology Program at the UCLA Health Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Bardia, I want to thank you so much for being here today and sharing with us this important information. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
If you're a woman, talk to your doctor by age 25 about your risk of getting breast cancer. More women under 40 are getting breast cancer, and these cancers are often more deadly. The American College of Radiology recommends you ask your doctor if you should get a mammogram before age 40, need other tests like an MRI with your yearly mammogram, or if at high risk should be checked more than once a year. For more information, visit mammographysaveslives.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The City of Henderson, along with the Military Order of the Purple Heart Chapter 730, the Veterans Action Foundation, and the Green Valley Rotary Club, invite you to honor the sacrifices of U.S. military service members with a Memorial Day ceremony this Monday, May 27th at 9 a.m. at Cornerstone Park, 1600 Wigwam Parkway. A patriotic field of honor display featuring over 400 U.S. flags is also on site all weekend. Get more information at cityofhenderson.com. That's cityofhenderson.com. Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors through May 31st. For every dollar donated, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to Southern Nevada children and families in need. Find out more or make a donation at threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. benefiting the Las Vegas Natural History Museum, and Monday, June 17th at 8 p.m. benefiting Youth Leadership Authority. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Golden Ticket Raffle to benefit Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada is back with an updated prize structure, including weekly drawings and a choice of 3 prize buckets. Tickets are on sale through midnight on June 24th, and the drawing happens at a cocktail reception on June 27th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Virgin Hotel's Manor Room. Check out the prizes, buy raffle tickets, or RSVP for the drawing event at thegoldenticket.org. That's thegoldenticket.org. And Angels of Las Vegas is holding their 3rd annual Angels on the Green charity golf tournament honoring National Men's Health Month on Friday, June 28th with an 8 a.m. shotgun start at Angel Park Golf Club, 100 South Rampart. There's also food, raffle prizes, an awards ceremony, and live music entertainment. Find out more or sign up to play at angelsoflv.org. That's angelsoflv.org.